Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Are you ready to get serious about your weight loss journey? Tried crash and burn calorie restriction? Considering the invasive strategy of GLP-1 injections like Ozempic? Slow down and consider a safer, easier, and long-lasting solution. Golo is clinically proven to work without the dangerous side effects of injections and fad diets. Golo's release helps your body combat the stress of dieting while controlling cravings and hunger. Minimize muscle loss and feel better with Golo. Just take one Golo release supplement with each meal and follow the Golo for Life plan. It's an effective and affordable plan to lose weight for good. There are no insurance hoops to jump through. No prescription needed. Just sensible, effective weight loss and a healthier lifestyle on your terms. Get started on a healthier, happier, and more energetic you at Golo.com. 5 million people have already discovered a better way to lose weight. Join them and go to Golo.com. That's Golo.com today.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer Rohan Nadkarni. Rohan, I have two quick questions for you.
Okay.
Before we start today's show, number one, have you been drowning in Alperen Şengün tape since we last spoke? Number two, when will you apologize for slandering the 19-year-old Phenom on last week's pod?
First of all, there was no Şengün slander. There was only Michael Pina slander, number one.
That's not how I remember it. Continue.
Number two, I've gotten multiple messages of support from the NBA community about your ridiculous summer league takes and how it's getting out of hand. And I had someone specifically request me to just cool you down when it comes to Şengün. So just to let you know where the greater NBA community is at, they're on my side because they think you need to take it down a few notches.
Do you have any summer league opinions whatsoever, or have you still just completely ignored it and pretended that it's not happening?
I mean, that is an opinion on summer league. That's my opinion on summer league, is that it does not matter. It truly does not matter. And the takes, you're just throwing darts at a wall. I mean, no disrespect to our colleagues who are covering it.
Yeah, right.
And please read Jeremy Wu's 10 takeaways on summer league. I'm sure Wu did a great job, but if you're wondering my opinion on summer league, I mean, if you want to talk about Max Strus and Turk Nowitzki, you know, I'm more than happy to talk about Heat culture and the Miami Heat summer league team. But outside of that, no opinion.
I know, I was about to say Peyton Pritchard making 57.7% of his threes in summer league. You know, it's a number I expect him to maintain throughout the regular season. I'm very excited about it.
Have you been watching Love Island? Speaking of summer projects, did you ever get started
on
Love Island?
We're not getting into that just yet. I will say, though, that I flew back from Michigan. I was visiting my wife's family over the weekend, and on the flight they had Love Island. So my wife was actually checking it out without me. And I peeked over because we had a conversation about this, I asked her, hey, can you watch it with me? You know, Rohan's been bugging me, texting me constantly to check it out. And so I saw her looking at it solo and I got pretty upset. So I don't know what the Love Island status is right now in the Pina household. Okay. I got to be honest.
Damn, sounds like you've been put on a Love Island, my friend. I guess
we'll have to talk
about that once this podcast ends.
Okay, so Rowan, we have a lot to get to on today's show, including a fun thought exercise where you and I will, hopefully it's fun, you and I will rank the 10 best duos in the NBA next season.
I love first, that. Last week was such a disaster when it came to ranking things that we said, let's jump right back into it.
No, it's the summer of ranking, honestly.
That's true.
Like, I got a lot of ideas that are all rank-oriented, and so the listeners love it. I know they do. First, we'd like to thank all of you for sending those emails in to openfloormail@gmail.com, openfloormail@gmail.com. Please keep them coming. We'll have a huge mailbag episode later on in the off season, so please keep sending your best and your brightest. Rohan, real quick, before we get into it, there was a trade over the weekend on Sunday night, and I just want to kind of mention it at the top, and we can quickly discuss whether or not it matters, but the Los Angeles Clippers traded Rajon Rondo, Patrick Beverley, and Daniel Oturo to the Memphis Grizzlies for Eric Bledsoe. Does this trade matter? And if so, who won in your eyes?
I don't think this trade really matters. I think the Clippers, Bobby Marks tweeted this move saves them a lot of money on their tax bill. Mm-hmm. I do think at this point in their careers, I know Beverly gets the hype because of kind of his antics. I don't think that they're going to do the same things with Eric Bledsoe that they do with Patrick Beverly for the most part. Rondo was the kind of person they seemed to bring in last year when they were trying to address their locker room situation with the Clippers. Do we have leaders, et cetera? I think they seem to not really care about that anymore after mm-hmm. how well they did in the playoffs, and Rondo wasn't really playing toward the end of their last couple of series. So I don't think it matters too much. I like Bledsoe on the Clippers. I think you could do a lot worse than him as a backup guard, certainly. For a lot of his career, he's been a starting guard on good teams. So, yeah, I don't think it moves the needle. I think the Grizzlies are probably going to end up parting ways with at least a couple of those guys. I don't see Rondo playing there for a full season. So, yeah, I don't think it really moves the needle for each team, but that's really all there is to say about it.
Sweet. I'm glad I brought this up. This has just been riveting conversation so far. I do like the fact that I like the $8.25 million trade exception. That's kind of interesting for a team
spoken
that has
like
very
a true
few
Celtics fan right there. Oh, the trade exception is wow, the Danny Ainge in you is strong, my friend.
You're so upset that Josh Richardson is on the Celtics. It's hurting you right now, and I love it. I love it. I love to see it. So I guess that we're just going to move on from that trade. There's really nothing else interesting to say about it. I think that
You're talking about trade exceptions,
Eric Bledsoe, it's cool that he's going home to the Clippers, and
oh, we're calling this going home.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Okay,
this is the homecoming for the kid, who's surprisingly 31 years old. I did not know that when I looked it up. But no, I think that you streamline the roster a little bit. You get rid of the clutter at that position, and I think Bledsoe's still an okay player, and he's obviously maligned for how he performed in the playoffs with the Bucks the past few before he was traded to the Pelicans the past few postseasons. I don't really feel like the postseason is that relevant to this discussion anymore because of Kawhi Leonard's knee, but we'll see. It'll be fun. Well, I don't know. Well, I felt like I should bring the trade up.
I agree. Listen, it was news. It happened. I do think Bledsoe is a better player than his playoff reputation has given him credit for. And mm-hmm. I'm still pretty high on the Clippers. I really like the way they were playing in the playoffs, even when Kawhi went down. And I think they've done a good job this offseason, bringing back Batum, Reggie Jackson, who is now a huge part of their success. Ibaka, if he's healthy, I think can make a difference. I like this team. Justice Winslow, if he's healthy, which is always a huge if. I'm still pretty high on the Clippers, so I like this move for them. And I think Bledsoe is in a much better role, a much better position to succeed with the Clippers than he has been in a few years.
Okay, so we have an email from Darren about the Golden State Warriors. Do you want to read that now, or do you want to get into it when we discuss? I feel like the Warriors are going to come up when we do this dynamic duo ranking. Mm. Do you want to kind of throw it in there, or do you want to get it out of the way now?
Wow, I didn't know that this was like a, I was going to have a choice today. This is thrilling.
You're my co-pilot. You're my co-pilot. Come on.
Let's wait. Let's jump into the duos because we know that this is inevitably going to go off the rail. So why not?
Of course.
Throw in another curveball in the middle. You know, like it's like in the middle of Iron Chef when the chairman throws in his curveball, his culinary curveball. We'll save it.
I've never seen Iron Chef, and you keep referencing it on the show, so I just smile and nod. I don't know what's going on, but that's okay. That's not a big deal. I feel like I don't need to understand the show to get your reference.
I mean, listen, there's two amazing stages for people to perform. One is the NBA Finals. The other is Kitchen Stadium. So, you know, that's while you've been watching Summer League, I guess I've just been watching Iron Chef America.
Apparently. Yeah. Okay, let's get into this dynamic duo conversation. I'm actually
I'm
very excited. Yeah. I'm very excited to have this. I feel like the NBA is this is where the league is right now. Like, minus the Brooklyn Nets, who are just their own thing, and mm-hmm. you know, some think that the Lakers have a big three. I personally do not. I think that dynamic duos are a
if
just
the
a
Lakers
big deal.
If the Lakers had Spencer Dinwiddie, would you consider them a big three?
No, but I would think that they're better because he's a better fit. Okay, so I feel like that's just going to hang over my head for the rest
is,
of time,
yeah,
and
absolutely.
I'm okay with that.
I respect
it's not a big
it.
Deal. Yeah. Okay. So I have. Let's see here. I have five honorable mentions, and
yeah,
then I have
no,
my
that's
top
not
10.
Allowed. You're not allowed to read your honorable mentions.
Should I save those for after, and then we can kind of, because I feel like the listeners are going to be. There's a lot of duos that are really good, and
yeah, that's what makes this difficult is that you have to pick 10 of them. You can't be like, here are actually 15 that I like that defeats the okay. the purpose of the exercise.
Okay, fair enough. So there's really no. Like specific parameters that I gave you. It's basically
none.
Just like who are the most talented, who complements each other the best, who yeah. creates the most problems. If you were playing NBA Jam, who would be your first pick
as
a team? That's kind of, yeah, you know, just like that. And also, we should say that before we get any angry emails, the players here have to be healthy. So, you know, I don't have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard on my list. I don't have Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray on my list. But besides that, everything else is fair game.
And you don't have Victor Oladipo and Duncan Robinson on your list?
Nah, yeah, I don't. They didn't make the cut, unfortunately.
I
see. So you give us your number 10 first, Rohan, and let's get it
My
started.
My number 10 is, drumroll please, Trae Young and John Collins of the Atlanta Hawks are my number 10 duo in the NBA.
Wow, I love it.
Ice Trey and John just throwing each other off the backboard dunks in the middle of a playoff series. I thought they obviously acquitted themselves really well during this postseason run and showed that they could be – I don't know that John Collins was necessarily the number two. I think Trey was just such a strong number one, but I think they showed that they can be a force in a playoff series, and Collins obviously earned that big extension with this playoff run. So that's my number 10 duo.
So this is really interesting. I had, I thought about including Trae Young in this discussion with one of my top 10 picks, but I wasn't sure who would be his like tandem partner.
That hung me up.
It's
tough. Cause I wanted to get Luke on this list, and spoiler alert, Luke is not on my list because he's just the one guy in Dallas. So,
Very interesting. I
had Trey and John at number 10. Who you got?
So you didn't think about Capella at all? You weren't like, Trey and Capella make more sense?
I did think about Capella. I just think that as important as Capella is to their defense, if I really wanted to win a playoff series, I'd rather have Collins than Capella.
Very interesting. Okay. I'm not even sure I disagree with that, but I think it is an interesting take nonetheless. Okay, my number 10 here is, I think, controversial right off the jump.
Oh, okay.
It is Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson.
That is so. That is probably the other two I was deciding with when I went and trained Collins. I just, the way I look at it is, I think in a vacuum, Ingram and Zion are more talented. At the same time, I mean, we're talking about a team that, and I think Atlanta's run, I have some questions about it. They did make it all the way to the conference finals. I mean, we're talking about Young and Collins. I don't think anyone had them beating Simmons and Embiid in a playoff series before the start of the season. I just need Ingram and Zion to make the playoffs if I'm willing to put them in my top 10 duos in the NBA. But like you said, there was no real criteria for this. So I'm not even mad at it because the two of them are so talented.
So, thank you. I was not really even expecting that. I think that there's been some talk about the incompatibility with these two. I don't really see it as much as others, and I am still pretty high on Brandon Ingram as a player. I think he's really good. The three-point shots come along. The defense between these two and the defensive woes that the Pelicans had last year because of these two, particularly Zion, really hurts their reputation for sure, and that's tough, and we'll see what they do next year.
I also run into is those are two great individual players, but are they a duo? You know what I mean?
I get you.
Yeah.
I think next year we're going to see a little bit more pick and roll action with Ingram and Zion. And what's really interesting about these two is both guys can handle the ball and both guys can set the screen. And so there can be inverted pick and rolls that are really fascinating. And, you know, whoever's guarding Ingram switching onto Zion is tough. Zion's just this, I just can't say enough positive things about him. The way his season ended was unfortunate with an injury, but when he was at his peak last season, he was completely unstoppable. He did not need space to finish at the basket. Like, I really don't think people understand how great of a year he had. It was historic. It was ridiculous. I mean, like, we're in this age where it's pace and space, and you need three-point shooting and all that, and the Pelicans didn't have it, and this guy still was like Shaq in the paint. It was truly remarkable, and so I'm really excited to see what he does next year. Coming back, is he going to have an outside shot? Is the defense going to be better? I don't know. It's awesome to see.
While we're talking about the Pelicans, this is my weekly reminder that Josh Hart is still a free agent. I don't know what's happening.
I
had to shoehorn that in. All right. Can I give you my number 9?
You may.
I think you're probably going to be mad at me, I'm assuming. But I have I have your MVP, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown in my number 9
spot.
We might
have to stop the show. This is absolutely blasphemous. I don't even
Are you serious? Are you serious? How high do you have it?
Number 9? Oh my goodness. This is go ahead.
I mean, I think everyone else above them on my list has either had more playoff success or more regular season success. Every single duo above them on my list.
I got to say, I said yeah, you know, this is like active duos. Like Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen are not allowed in this.
Oh, in this exercise. I have to take Dwayne Wade and Udonis off.
I don't want to go on a Udonis tangent with you, but I'm just curious. What was your reaction when you saw that he re-signed with the team for his 19th straight season or whatever it is?
Why the people who are upset about Udonis Haslem still playing for the Miami Heat have forgotten about the reason why they fell in love with basketball in the first place. We're talking about someone who is from the city of Miami, a pillar in the community. What is there to dislike? Like, are you that obsessed with the idea of your team having some kind of project on the end of the bench that there's no room for a franchise legend? Udonis Haslem, I will be very upset the day he retires from the NBA. He has a place on my favorite team for as long as he wants. So I love that Udonis Haslem is still kicking it. He recently did Duncan Robinson's podcast and was telling such incredible stories. I love that guy. I'd ride for him every single day of the week. I'm very happy that he's still in the NBA.
If Udonis Haslem played at Summer League, would you watch it?
Yes.
Okay.
I want Udonis Haslam to play more. I would not mind if he was the team's backup center. I would have rather Udonis be starting at center a couple years ago than Hassan Whiteside, but we don't have to relitigate that. Let's talk about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, my number nine duo.
Listen, yeah, explain yourself, please.
Listen, they're obviously very, very good, but I think you'll see when I name the duos ahead of them, they either haven't had the individual success as one or two of those players, or the playoff success of everyone ahead of them. I think that people are getting ahead of themselves with Jason Tatum a little bit. I want to see him win that scoring title or MVP first, not just hear people like you talk about him having the potential to do it. Obviously, I'm not even holding what happened to them last season against them. Obviously, Tatum had COVID. Jaylen Brown was hurt for the playoffs and the end of the run or end of the regular season. I think they're incredibly talented. I'm super high on them. If anything, I'm surprised Boston is not trying harder to go all in at this current moment. I was a little surprised. You and Chris touched on this last week. Their offseason felt a little more static than I thought it would be. Not that they had a ton of options. I think that they're a championship-ready core right now, but yeah, there's just a lot of talent in the league, Mike. I don't know what you want to say.
Okay, so I don't even know where to begin picking this argument apart, but so Jason Tatum, right?
Okay,
his playoff history. Let's just go through the playoff history right now with this guy, who as a 19-year-old. Started 19 playoff games, averaged 18.5 points on a run to the Eastern Conference Finals, dunked on LeBron James. In the bubble, his averages were 25.7 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists per game, shot 37% from the three-point line, averaged a playoff/bubble high, 40.6 minutes per game. Last year, with Jaylen Brown injured, and, you know, Romeo Langford getting minutes and Aaron Nesmith getting in minutes and Kemba Walker not being able to play because of his knee injuries against the, I think, the most talented team in the playoffs before they got hurt. I think that's fair to say with the Brooklyn Nets. He averaged 30.6 points, 5.8 rebounds, 4.6 assists, shot 39% from deep, was unstoppable. Got to the line, 10 free throws a game, shot 92% from the line. I don't really know what else there is to really say. Just with Tatum, and I haven't even brought up Jaylen Brown, who was hurt, obviously, didn't play in that series, made the jump to All-Star last season. Tatum should have been All-NBA last year, I think, even with COVID, was tremendous throughout the season. Both are all defensive team caliber wings. All defensive team caliber wings are desirable. Both can shoot threes. Both can handle the ball. Both are improving as playmakers. So I don't really know what there is to denigrate here. I will say
you're making an argument. First of all, there's no criteria for this, as you've mentioned. So you can come with you were starting a team, blah blah blah. We didn't talk about that.
Yeah.
So I'm throwing that out the window already. Secondly, you're making this about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, who I have.
Yes.
This is, you know, I'm having them in the top 10 duos in the NBA for a team that was, you know, finished in the play-in tournament in the East last year. If anything, I'm showing my respect for these guys. I think they're really good. I'm looking ahead and I see all these players have had a lot of success in this league. There's just a lot of good duos, Mike. I think the argument you need to make is, you'll have an opportunity to do it, is the players I've listed ahead of them. But I feel confident where I have Tatum and Brown, who I have the utmost respect for. It's just, like I said, there's a lot of good players in this league. There's some teams that maybe even have two duos on it that are better than what the Celtics have. So, you know, it just...
Ooh, wow. Okay. You're just... I don't even know what to say to that statement. Okay. Can I give my number nine then?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. My number nine is Devin Booker and Chris Paul.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And
no, I mean, we're just talking about a guy who put up back-to-back 40-point games in the NBA Finals and someone who at 36 finished top five MVP voting. But no. It's crazy to have those guys ahead of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. I get it.
I have all the respect in the world for these players. And, to quote you from 10 seconds ago, this is why they're in my top 10.
I just think everything you said about Jason Tatum, you could yes. say that about Devin Booker after this playoff run. Maybe not the all-NBA caliber defense, but if he can play on one of the better defenses in the playoffs, is it as important that his individual defense isn't as great as Jason Tatum's? I don't know. And I just saw him be the number one scoring option on a team that made it to the NBA Finals.
I'm not disparaging Devin Booker at all. Mm-hmm. I will not do that. I will say that watching the conference finals and watching the finals, both of those teams were trying to attack Devin Booker throughout those series. And there is a reason for that. Nobody's trying to attack Jason Tatum. Defense matters. So I will say that, and I think that Tatum is just a better player than Devin Booker.
I don't disagree. Give me Chris Paul and Devin. Give me the duo that just made the NBA Finals.
No, that's cool. I think that I would rather also, if we're just comparing these two players, if I was starting next season out, I might rather have Jaylen Brown than Chris Paul, given their age.
Come on, man.
What is wrong with that?
Top five in MVP voting, Mike.
I understand all that. I think that
he took the Phoenix Suns to the NBA Finals. We're talking about a team that was under 500, acquired Chris Paul, and made it to the NBA Finals.
Okay, you need to add some context.
You need to put some respect. You need to put some respect on the point guard.
Dude. I have all the respect in the world. I will say we need to add some context. And when we just, when
you
we
have
make
a little bit Rowan. Less respect than all of it in the world.
Rowan, when we make blanket statements like Chris Paul led this team to the NBA Finals, it's like, okay, we need to, you know, throw some context in there. We got to say that, hey,
well, that's
AD
why he's got
hurt.
His
Jamal Murray was hurt. Kawhi Leonard had tore his ACL in the previous round. Like, they didn't have to go up against the best players or the second best players on all the teams that they played.
That's out of his control. That's out of his control.
Sure, no, and all the respect to him. Okay, so you're number eight, Rowan.
Your turn to get mad at me all over again. I have... from your Miami Heat, Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo is my number eight duo in the NBA.
Okay. Yeah, they're on my list.
And we're obviously talking about two of the most versatile defenders in the NBA. I think Bam is obviously such a special player. And then you have Jimmy Butler, who I think, obviously, he had a very disappointing playoff exit. There's no secret. If anything, it's not being talked about enough how poorly he played in that first round. At the same time, he had a two-month stretch there during the regular season after he recovered from his own bout of COVID that I think he was playing like a top eight player in the league for a long period of time. The way he's expanded his game in Miami is a playmaker, et cetera. Obviously, the shooting is an issue, but I mean, we saw him go in that playoff series in a finals against a Lakers team that was really, really good defensively. He thrived. 40-point triple doubles, etc. Yeah, I got Jimmy and Bam at number eight, and I think they're going to be coming back with a vengeance this season with some more help.
I'm surprised that I had Jimmy and Bam higher than you did. Honestly,
as am I. I thought you were going to be really upset about this one, but I am. If anything, I'm holding their playoff performances against them a little bit. I know I feel like I flip-flop on that all the time in terms of how much I weigh the playoff performances, but after you make a finals, you've invited those expectations on yourself. I thought the Bucks were a better team. They should have won that series. I'm not even upset about that, but I think both of them would tell you that they hold themselves to a higher standard than what they showed in that playoff series, whether it was Jimmy's inability to get his offense going, Bam, I think not taking that mid-range jumper, seemingly losing confidence in it. I'm holding that against the two of them a little bit, but obviously they're super talented.
Yeah. I think that, you know, we talked about when we did talk about the Heat, Chris and I on the Eastern Conference power rankings, talking about Miami, like Bam Adebayo is my number one reason to be optimistic about the team. They add PJ Tucker, they add Kyle Lowry. That's wonderful. They re-signed Duncan Robinson. I think Bam is just the key, and nobody improves like Bam Adebayo from year to year. We saw that last year. I think it was a little overlooked for whatever reason, but this guy when he makes steps off, when he has an off season to work on his game, basically, and then you look at his performance in Team USA, where he's starting at the five, and in the championship game against France, he was amazing defensively, and he was impacting the game like nobody's business without even having to touch the ball. So I'm a huge fan of Bam. Can't say enough positive things about him. I think he's the best defensive player in the entire NBA. So yeah, I have him a little bit higher, and I'll just shout him out when we get there. But my number eight, I know you do not have on your list, and that is Luka and KP. You know,
interesting.
I think, okay, so KP being here is tough, and I understand that.
Do you part think of it, Chris Stapps considers them a duo?
This is about a weird year where Chris Stapps comes back from surgery on his meniscus,
isn't that every year for Chris Stapps now, where he's coming back from something?
Well, that's. I mean, you could say that for sure. I mean, he's been injury prone, no doubt. But I'm projecting forward to next season, where this dude's 26. In the bubble before he got hurt was incredible, and I think a lot of people forget about that. His defense has been maligned, and in every season of his career except for last year, which is this totally weird year, and you know, I don't know. In every season of his career up to that point, his team's defense has been better with him on the floor. I know that Luka and KP as a pick and roll, pick and pop combination are as efficient, more efficient than pretty much every other duo in basketball. And this pick right here is also less about my optimism for KP and more about me being completely like dumbfounded by watching Luka on a basketball court. And I mean, this is an MVP candidate who is 22 years old and doing things we basically haven't seen since LeBron James. So, yeah, like Kristaps has made an all-star team. I don't anticipate him necessarily doing that again. I see him being better than he was last year. I see Luka being even better than he was last year, and I just have to give respect to Luka.
I'm not going to yell at you for this. I'll just say the fact that the Mavs were actively looking to create a new duo this offseason is the reason why they're not on my list. And I love what Kristaps was with the Knicks, and I wish that situation had worked out. And when he was, you know, playing healthy and sustained healthy basketball, he's one of the most exciting players in the NBA. But we're talking about a max guy that was completely ineffective in a playoff series. And this summer was all about the Mavs. Like, we need to get Kyle Lowry. We need to get someone. We need to find Luka, a partner, a running mate, someone who can carry the offense, et cetera. The fact that they were so actively looking for that with Kristaps on the team, I understand, like I said, Luka's so talented that you want to find a way to get him on this list. But, you know, it's duos. And I just think that if you're doing a two-on-two tournament or something weird, I don't know. I just don't think that they're it. The Kristaps situation is taking an unfortunate turn, I think, for Dallas, because that trade made a lot of sense at the time. It was a steal, frankly. But I just don't think they're a duo. I just don't think that they're a tandem. I don't see it.
That's fair. I understand. I expect, you know, I'm not a prisoner of the moment like some people. So
oh my God.
We'll see what happens next year. It should be fun. Give us your number seven.
My number seven, we're going to go out to Salt Lake City.
Oh, my God. I am stunned by this. Continue.
Donovan Mitchell and Joe. No, I'm kidding. Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, my number seven duo.
Wow. That's my number seven duo as well.
Wow. So how about that? Yeah. I don't even know how to feel about that.
I know. I'm shocked.
Listen, there's a baseline level of talent there that's super high, and it's going to guarantee a certain number of wins, especially during the regular season. I mean, at the end of the day, as much as we may chastise Gobert, we're talking about a multiple Defensive Player of the Year award winner. Mitchell is one of the most exciting players in the league. and you brought this up on our last podcast, he was hurt during the playoffs. And, I mean, he started those playoffs super hot despite coming back from injury. Was an absolute menace in that Grizzlies series. When those first couple games in Utah, the Clippers had no answer for him. So, yeah, there's just a baseline level of talent there that I think is so high that you can't leave them off this list.
It's also, I'm just attracted to how complimentary they are. We're like, yes. Okay, one guy needs the ball. No, I don't think
Duncan needs the ball. They're the opposite of Luka and Kristaps, and they actually play well together. So,
in some ways, yes, even though I disagree. But you know what I mean? Like, Rudy knows his role on offense. Mm-hmm. He sets screens. He dives hard. He runs the floor. He rebounds. And that's what the Jazz need him to do. He's not calling for, he's not ducking into the post when Donovan's trying to drive or anything like that. And he really fits into their, I guess, their four out offense and the spread pick and roll scheme. So I love that. I think Donovan is, he's just unguardable in the playoffs. And when he's healthy, he's like, I feel like he's been kind of cheated out of that. I don't know if it's like a breakout series, because like he's had so many, like if you just look at the box scores of his postseason
career. I can't believe you have Tatum and Brown ahead of Mitchell and Gobert. I can't
really
believe it. I really can't. I mean, all the things, I think in a vacuum, again, Tatum is a better player than Mitchell. I mean, he's a little bit bigger. Okay. He's got the defense. But we've seen I'll explain, because
okay.
I just think, first of all, we have Gobert. At the end of the day, for all the criticisms, the defensive player of the year. Okay, I mean, he's really, really good. They were the number one seed in the conference, Mike. And beyond that, I mean, all those scoring things you've talked about, we've seen Mitchell do it in the playoffs as well. We've seen him carry that offense like he did in that Denver series last year. I'm pretty surprised. I'm not saying it's insane or blasphemous. I understand where you're coming from, but they've had, I think, a proven track record of success that, and that's from when Mitchell was a rookie as well. And coming in a tough situation, I might add, you know, that team lost Gordon Hayward. I don't think that they were confident they'd be right back to where they were now. I think that they've kept the Jazz at a higher level of consistent success than Tatum and Brown have had in Boston, even though they've been very successful.
Wait, how many conference finals have Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert been to? Have they been to one?
Here, I mean, if we want to talk about how bad those Eastern conferences
were, have they been to one?
Here we go.
Have they been to one? I'm just curious. I don't remember.
No, they have not. No, they have not.
Oh, okay. So Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have been to how many?
Okay. Two? Is it two?
So, okay. So, I just have a quick question for you, because you admitted that Jason Tatum is superior to Donovan Mitchell in every way. Would you rather have, if I were to say, okay, you're going to start a team next season, Rohan, and you can have either, we're starting out, first pick. You can have Rudy Gobert, you can have Jaylen Brown. Who do you want on your team? Who are you picking? I know your answer, too.
I'm probably picking Jaylen Brown. Listen,
okay,
I understand what you're saying. And again, I think the who are you starting a team with is probably a different argument. Or a little bit of a different exercise than how I went about this.
Uh-huh. No, I understand.
But, yeah, the proof is in the pudding with the Jazz. As much as I personally, you know, laugh at them and have been calling them a second-round exit all year, I might add, they did it. They did it, and I think they earned that spot. So that's my number seven. Who's your number seven?
I'm so glad that you did not go to law school, Rohan. I'm fortunate for everyone, every would-be client of yours.
Listen, I think
thankful
I'm
for all of them.
No, because I'd be a great constitutional lawyer, I think, because you're coming up with different rules that don't apply to what we're doing today. This wasn't a draft, you know. This wasn't a who are you building a team around. This was just who are your mm-hmm. top 10 duos right now. So. Give me the team that was the number. Give me the two best players from the number one seed in the league. How about that?
Okay, I'm surprised.
As opposed to the play-in Celtics. How many play-in games have the Jazz played in?
Okay, so my number six. Actually, you give me your number six, because we've already covered. My number six was Jimmy and Bam.
Okay,
so You give me your number six.
My number six, Chris Paul and Devin Booker. Point guard and Book. I mean, we talked about them, obviously, I think a little bit when you brought them up, but I'm a huge Chris Paul fan. I'm probably the biggest Chris Paul fan in the world. I will believe in him until I actually see the wheels fall off. If anything, I'm a little annoyed because I think he had too much pride to admit that he was injured during the finals. He ends up having surgery on his left wrist. He obviously was not himself in that series, even after having a couple really good games. I mean, Booker, you know, obviously Giannis was incredible in that series. We're talking about if a few bounces go the other way. We're talking about, I think, Devin Booker in similar tones, frankly. I mean, back-to-back 40-point games. The Suns end up losing both of those games. And, you know, obviously there's discourse, oh, did Phoenix play into Milwaukee's hands, et cetera. I mean, those were really close games. So I'm really high on this duo. I think they have a chance to be the number one seed in the West next year. I think they're the only team in the top of the West, frankly, that didn't get a little bit worse. So I'm really high on Chris Paul and Devin Booker, and you know how I feel about Chris. So they're my number six duo.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I wrote this long – I forget if I said this on the pod before, but I wrote this, like, long Devin Booker column during the finals that never ran because they lost four straight games. But when he was doing his thing, two 40-point games, I looked it up to see just how many players have ever done that. And I think – I'm going off the top of my head now. I think it was Jordan – LeBron and Shaq, and obviously Giannis did it in this year. But heading in, those I think were those only the three players who have ever scored 40 plus in two games in the same finals. So incredible. He's amazing. He will be a scoring champion at some point in his career. Gold medal winner. Shout out to Devin Booker. Okay, I'm going to give you my number five, and then you can give me your number five because I want to get to this email.
Well, so who was your number six?
My six was Jimmy and Bam.
Okay, that's right. Okay, let's get to your number five.
Okay, so my number five is Steph and Draymond.
Hey, that's my number five too.
Wow.
How about
incredible.
That? How about that?
Okay, so I'm going to read this email as I teased at the top from Darren.
The and culinary curveball, kind of just... as I'm calling it. Shout out to Darren.
Yes, exactly. So we can kind of... needle in a conversation about Draymond and Steph into this question. Okay, from Darren, who writes, with Steph playing like an MVP and Draymond a top defensive player of the year candidate, the Warriors were the ninth best team in the West last season. They needed a furious charge from Steph, basically putting up 40 a game for the last 20 games to even be that. They didn't make any moves. Otto Porter is probably a good rotation guy if he stays healthy, which he hasn't been in years. Andre Iguodala isn't going to play much. Nemanja Bjelica can be solid enough as the eighth or ninth man.
The steal? The young guys... Are you talking about Nemanja Bjelica, the steal?
He is. I continue. The young guys are just that. None ready to move the needle. Jordan Poole is probably their second best shot creator. How are they winning any of the minutes Steph sits or the 10 to 15 games he misses? Is it you are banking on a trade or counting on Clay to be as good or better than he was after 2+ years away with two career-changing injuries? He might not even be playing until January and not playing full minutes until late in the season. I expect they will return to the playoffs and wouldn't want to play them once they get there, but one of the top title contenders in the West or the number two seed, as Michael predicted, seems unrealistic. So that is Darren. Thank you so much for that email, Darren. It was wonderful. Obviously, Darren is not as high on the Warriors as I think I am. Rohan, you were not on the... Actually, yes, you were on the West Coast pod. My bad. But we're in the offseason. I'm sorry. My head is my head is just spinning.
Cluttered with all that Summer League nonsense you've been watching.
Exactly. 100%. So just your response to this email.
Well, I'm not as low on Darren nor high on the Warriors as you are. I do think that... I think Wiseman's going to be better in year two. I think the Warriors, another problem they had is I don't think they were playing their best lineups for a lot of the season last year. I think Kerr was also making a mistake in the way he was using Wiseman. They weren't running anywhere near as many pick and rolls as they needed to. And I think I wrote about that during the season. They finally started leaning on it about a month or two in, and they started to look a lot better. I do think they're going to be really good when Clay returns. I am betting on Clay. I'm willing to make that bet. I like the Porter signing because I understand he hasn't been healthy, and that's really the big if, but he can thrive in that role that they're going to ask him to play. I think they should get improvement from the young guys. So I'm not on low as them as Darren. And beyond that, like, listen, man, they got Steph. He's one of the four or five best players in the world. You know, all teams struggle when their star sits. Okay. The Lakers struggle when LeBron James sits and they still have Anthony Davis. So, you know, that's a part of the game. That's a part of the league, especially when you orbit so much around a singular talent. So I'm not as low on them as Darren, because I think last year was a particularly tough year for them because they were not at all prepared to play without Clay. And I think they're a little bit better equipped to do that this year. And then he's going to return.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Darren outlined the worst case scenario. And maybe to my own fault, the reason why I think that they can be the number two seed and a legitimate title contender is because I see the best case scenario. Like, I see Clay being pretty close. I see him being equal offensively and pretty close defensively to what he was. And, like, I think you can't overlook the corporate knowledge of bringing in someone like Andre Iguodala back into the organization. Last year, the bench was just so young, so inexperienced, so green. Even if Porter isn't, you know, doesn't look anything like the guy who got the max contract when he was in Washington, like, he just knows how to play NBA basketball, and he'll fit into that role. Same with Bielitsa, same with, I think, just about everybody else on the roster who is a veteran. And I am also thinking that, you know, I don't want to get into summer league, so I won't. But, like, Moses Moody and Jonathan Kuminga look pretty interesting.
They're good prospects. They're interesting prospects. Yeah, no doubt.
Like, those two plus Wiseman, who had, you know, a disastrous rookie season. I don't think he could play any worse. Like, these are going to be, I don't know if they're going to be good players next year for them, but they will be able to be productive. And when you play beside Steph, you look like a genius, because that dude just creates so much space for you with his gravity, and Draymond is one of the best passers in the entire NBA. And we didn't even mention Andrew Wiggins, who is still a talent. I know that he's not everyone's favorite player or cup of tea, but he's still a talent and worthy of some kind of shout-out in this conversation. So let's talk. I know this doesn't really answer the question about Steph and Draymond too much, but why did you have them at number five, Rohan?
They're the kind of players that I'll go down with the ship with those two guys on my team. You know what I mean? I trust them in big moments. I was shocked that they lost that Grizzlies game, but I think they were just kind of, they had a little bit of a letdown after that Lakers game, which I feel like they probably think they let slip, but those are just two guys who've been through every situation in this league, have played in so many big games, are so talented, so smart, so intelligent, play so well off of each other. Arguably the highest IQ duo on this list, although everyone from this point forward is obviously incredible. But yeah, man, you have to have Steph on there. He's just too good. He's just too good. I think he's one of the best players in the world still. And Draymond, man, I know he's infuriating and Warriors fans need him to shoot more, and I understand all of that, but those are just two guys that when the going gets tough, I want them on my team. I want both of them on my team.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, covering their finals, pretty much every one of their finals, not all of them, the last three or four, it's just like I can't get those memories out of my head. It seems like it was a very long time ago, but even just watching Steph last year, Steph was doing that in empty gyms, like, get the adrenaline flowing, get some fans in the building, and he's going to be even better, man. He's just,
you know, he's ridiculous. They were only in the finals 2 years ago. Doesn't that sound insane?
It does. Yeah. It does. And I really appreciated Draymond's, I think it was in his exit interview with the media after the season, where I'm paraphrasing his quote, but he said something along the lines of, he proved to himself that he can still F up opposing offenses, and he can. He is a genius on the basketball court. So
watching him play pick and roll defense, his positioning is, you can try to teach it, but the instincts he has when he is showing and recovering and staying in a passing lane. And I don't think there's a player in the league who's better at positioning their body in rotations, scrambles, etc. He's on another level. It's absolutely genius level work, as you mentioned. He's incredible, man. He's incredible.
And I just love, there was one play in the championship game in the Olympics against France where I'm blanking on the name of the French big man who posted him up, made like three back down dribbles and scored on a jump hook. And they tried to run the over Draymond, and they tried to run the exact same play on the next possession. And Draymond knew it was coming. And this dude put the ball on the floor, tried to throw his shoulder into Draymond. And I don't think Draymond moved a centimeter. And then the dude was like, oh, I'm in trouble. And he had to kick the ball out. Like, Draymond just not going to let things happen to him two times in a row. Like, he's so great, man. I love watching him play basketball. Okay, so wow. So I was expecting, honestly, for us to have zero. Actually, we'll see in the top two. Yeah. But beyond that, I was anticipating us not overlapping at all in this exercise. So it's pretty interesting that we both have Steph and Draymond at five, and then Donovan and Rudy at seven. My number four, I'll just say, because I want to get it out of the way, I had Tatum and Jaylen at number four.
So this is where you're going to be really upset with me, I think, once again.
Okay.
My number four.
I'm already upset. Are you ready? But continue.
My number four is Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving.
Wait. Rohan. This is incredible stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Please explain yourself.
I think you have to split the Nets up into two duos. So I'm going to be honest. I think Kevin Durant appears again on my list, but they just have to.
Oh, Rohan, no.
Why not?
You can't do that.
Why not?
You absolutely cannot do that.
Where did it say in the contest rules? Where did it say?
Rohan.
Guess what, Mike? I did it. You have to split the Nets up into two duos. Here's the thing. We saw them play with two duos for so much of last season that if one of them goes down, that's the talent they have. That really is a testament, I think, to Durant's talent, because I think that he was on another level in the playoffs, man. We have not seen him play like that maybe in his career ever. Mm-hmm. And we saw him do it with just Kyrie for a couple games. We saw him do it with just Harden for a couple games. And I had to split him up. I don't know how you do this list without splitting him up, because, first of all, one of these guys is apparently liable to get hurt or sit for 15 games at any moment. Sure. And if anything, it speaks to the brilliant construction of this Nets team, because they can have one of their stars go down and still have an incredible duo left on the list. So I had to split them up. I'm sorry. I had to split them up. So I got KD and Kyrie at my number four.
I can't believe you did this. You know, I guess a part of me will come around. Right now I'm enraged. And really think you hurt the spirit of the exercise.
I disagree. Right, I disagree. First of all, you had five honorable mentions. You had five honorable mentions.
Which we'll quickly list at the end of the
episode. I'm being creative. Okay, that's what we call this. This is creativity. This is, how do I explain how top loaded this team is? It's because, frankly, they have two duos who are that good. And we saw two of those duos within the same playoff series, is the crazy part.
Sure. No,
I was going to put Kevin Durant and one leg James Harden at number 11. So I had to split them up. So let's hear your number four.
So my four was Tatum and
Jaylen.
Oh, that's
right, which is absurd.
And we already talked about them. Absurd. It's not.
Oh, my
but,
God.
Okay.
Number four, dude. Give me a break. Ahead of Steph and Draymond.
I know. Yep. I did it.
You want to talk about ruining the spirit of this exercise?
Okay, we'll see. We'll see next season, man. We'll see. My number three, I'll say, Giannis Antetokounmpo and Bobby Portis. Oh no, sorry, that was a typo. I meant to say Giannis Antetokounmpo, and I had honestly a difficult time trying to figure out if it was going to be Chris Middleton or Jrue Holiday. I think Chris Middleton is ultimately better, and by the slightest of hairs, and just has been with Giannis for like the past 9 years, so I felt like it would be disrespectful if I put anyone else there. So that's my number three duo.
Do you want to hear who I had for my number three?
I would love to hear.
Giannis Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton. How about that?
Wow.
How about that?
Sweet.
Yeah, I'm with you. I had the exact same thing where I was like, how do you split up Drew and Chris when both obviously had their moments in the playoffs and in the finals in particular? But I'm with you. I erred on Middleton's been there for longer. I think that he can take over a game offensively, obviously in a way that Drew could not. And he's also a great defender. I mean, he's not the on-ball, you know, Tasmanian devil maybe that Drew Holiday is, but he's mm-hmm. pretty damn good. So mm-hmm. I they have to be mm-hmm. in the top three, especially after what Giannis did in the finals.
So when I first put this list together, mm-hmm. I had you'll love this. I had for like 5 seconds, I had Tatum and Jaylen at number three.
You are absolutely a disgusting, disgusting individual. I'm glad your wife started watching Love Island without you.
What a low blow that was.
Oh, man. Yeah. Thank God you came to your senses on that one. I would have dropped the mic and left. You're just hearing feedback on my end. Can I give you my number?
Okay, I think...
Okay. We have to have the same...
No, I was about... We definitely do, but I'm interested to see if there's potential for disagreement mm-hmm. here with where we're placing them. I don't think so, but yeah. You give us your number two.
LeBron James and Anthony Davis.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, I guess we do have the same order. I have LeBron and AD at number two as well.
Yeah, I think that AD, I think, is going to land somewhere in between where he was in the bubble and where he was last season. The Lakers are another mm-hmm. team that until they got hit with injuries, they were one of the best teams in the league yet again. I think I was shocked, if anything, at how fast the Lakers came out of the gate, considering the short turnaround they had. And LeBron, frankly, his injury was a freak one. It didn't look like one of those fatigue-related ones, et cetera, although who knows? I'm not a doctor, obviously, or a lawyer, apparently, according to you. I just think that they are – have once – I was surprised from the moment AD and LeBron started playing together, how quickly they've gelled, how quickly they've been the backbone of two great defenses, et cetera. They're still really, really good. And the reason why I'm high on the Lakers is because of those two guys.
So I wrote this column right after the finals. Actually, I think it was during the finals, to give myself a little bit more credit, in the bubble. I wrote it for GQ about how Anthony Davis was just about to ruin and end the small ball era. And that didn't really happen last season. And, you know, I think no star arguably was affected more by the quick turnaround and just the truncated season that was. And his body broke down in the end, and his numbers throughout the season were by his standards, they were bad. They were bad numbers. And the three-point shot never came around, shot 26%. The mid-range shot, which was so critical in their title run, and I'm really interested to see if that returns. That was down. And I don't know, there's this thing with Anthony Davis where it's like, he should be the best player in the world by now. Like, if we were to go back at the beginning of his career, like, there's this one play when he was on the Olympic team when he was in Kentucky. I don't know if you remember this, but, like, I think it was the 2012 Olympics. Yeah. And he hit, like, a three and fell over, and it was a four-point play, and, like, Kobe and LeBron and
they're all having a laugh.
Ran over to him to pick him up. Yeah, and I was just like, if you were to tell me, like, I was looking at AD and I was like, this guy, when he's 27, when he's 28, he is going to easily be the best player in basketball. And he looked like he was on the cusp of that in the bubble, for sure. He was, in my opinion, the best player in the Lakers. No disrespect to LeBron. And, you know, he's the guy who's like, oh, AD, go guard Jimmy because he's destroying us. And AD did shut him down. And I guess the rest is history there. A lot of this is like trying not to be a prisoner of the moment mm-hmm. with AD and believing that he can bounce back and be the phenom, the two-way phenom, the defensive player of the year candidate, the center of a great offense that he should be. And some of it is just me doubting that, I don't know, like the sustainability of some of those numbers in the bubble, which mm-hmm. was a weird environment, and the fact that he's just so unwilling to play the five full time at this point in his career, which is just a little worrisome to me still. Yeah. I mean, I understand it, I guess, but it's just like, come on, man. Like, that the best version of your team is with you at the five. And I mean, so you're wasting these roster
spots. The thing
is,
you're saying all these things, and the fact that you still have him in the top two duos, I think, says how much we both respect his talent. And I'll say this about AD is I think he still has the capabilities to be that guy that you're talking about. Right now, him and LeBron, I think, are just the most symbiotic duo on this list, where I think our number one, the individual talent's higher, but I don't think there's a duo on this list that, in fact, you know, when I did my story on Anthony Davis for last year's NBA preview issue, and I just talking to everyone in the Lakers organization, it's obvious that they feel like LeBron and AD really bring out the best in each other. And while I think AD could maybe do a little bit more if he was, quote unquote, on his own team and not, you know, it's hard to be a superstar next to someone like LeBron, but they just have such an incredible symbiotic relationship, and he makes LeBron's life easier and vice versa. He was, like you mentioned, I don't think he was the best player on that Lakers team, but I think he was the engine, if that makes sense. He's like kind of the, he is not more responsible for their success than LeBron, but he makes it possible because of all the things he can do and the way he opens up the game for everyone else on the floor. They're just a really special duo. And as much as it pains me to say, as the president, founder, and CEO of the Dwayne Wade fan club, I think that LeBron and AD, I think that's the best partnership LeBron's had in his career, just because of the ways AD makes his life more easy. They are a really, really incredible duo.
You'd put them up above LeBron and Mario Chalmers?
Oh, God. All I'm saying is if Mario Chalmers was in Space Jam 2, it wouldn't even have been close, you know? Algie, I haven't watched the movie, but whoever Don Cheadle was playing would have been like, no, take your son back. I don't want to go up against championship Chalmers.
Yeah, the thing about AD really quick, and we're like not even talking about LeBron because it's just so, it's LeBron.
Yeah, come on.
Stop.
It's LeBron.
We don't really need to even discuss it. But the thing about AD that's really interesting to me is he's kind of like a, like when I think about it and I compare him to other superstars, like super duper stars, everybody else can raise the floor of their organization. Like throw him on the, it doesn't matter who's around him, throw him on the court and he's, that team's going to go to the playoffs and they're going to be competitive. I don't necessarily feel that way about AD, but you throw AD in a situation, as you were saying, where he has this mutually beneficial relationship with LeBron James and like your ceiling just is not visible. You can't, like, AD is that guy who just raises the ceiling to a level that is ridiculous. And so that's just a little unique thing about him, I think, when we compare him to other superstars. Because, like, with Jokic, for example, it's like, throw Jokic on a team. That team is going to be amazing. Doesn't matter. He makes everyone around him better, obviously, in direct and perceptible ways, and it's not the same case so far with AD.
And I, before we get to number one, can I give you some behind the scenes scoop on the Anthony Davis story I wrote last year?
Is this Rohan's story?
It might be. It might be a quick Anthony Davis story by Rohan.
Let's go.
So I interviewed Anthony Davis, who ended up on the cover of our NBA preview issue last year, and I spoke to him on the phone. We do the interview, then I show up to the photo shoot at this hotel in Beverly Hills. And Anthony Davis walks in and someone from Clutch Sports is there and is like, oh, Anthony, you know, this is Jeffrey. She's introducing everyone in the room. She's like, this is Rohan. He goes, Rohan? He's like, Rohan's here. And I'm like, oh, man, like our interview was great. And I was like, yeah, man, I'm right here. And he was like, oh, I thought it was a different Rohan.
Wow. Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's cool. I thought it was a different one. I was like, all right. And then at the end of the photo shoot, our photographer, Jeffrey Salter, was like, I have a flight to catch, and I'm supposed to return this stuff to the Lakers, but I don't have time to do it. So I had to take Anthony Davis's jersey and shoes home, the one that he used in his photo shoot, and just I just had it in my apartment for like 2 nights before I could return it to the Lakers. It was like having the Pulp Fiction briefcase in my home for 2 nights when I was too scared to look at it.
That's incredible. Yeah. And I don't know of any other Rohans. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, that was a tough break, man. That's like the one thing I really have going for me. It was I'm probably the only Rohan you know. And when that, I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, man, he must have really liked our conversation. No, he did not. Like the look of disappointment on his face when he realized it was just me.
That's a great story. Yeah. I enjoyed it. Maybe your best yet.
Okay, there we go. Wow. All right. Good to know.
Yeah. Okay, so our number one duo here is Kevin Durant and James Harden.
That's right. And I think it has more to do with KD than Harden.
You know, I'm not going to besmirch James Harden over here.
Okay.
I mean, one of the reasons why the Nets are unguardable is they've just taken over this and they assume this ISO heavy identity. I wrote about it at the beginning of the playoffs when they were just dicing up Evan Fournier and Kemba Walker in the first round of the playoffs. And that's because of Harden. He's not, you can't stay in front of James Harden. And that's going to be really interesting. We should say that, you know, they changed the rules, heading into this season, the foul rules, and, players like Harden and Trae Young, who are experts at baiting defenders into hitting them and drawing contact and getting refs to blow the whistle. That's no longer going to be an advantage for him. I still think he's just excellent.
Right. And I also, frankly, it remains to be seen to me how effective those rules actually are or how willing refs will be to continue to call or not call fouls against James Harden. I will say, to Harden's credit also, not to besmirch him, I'm just that high on KD, who I think him and Giannis right now are battling for that title of best player in the world at this current moment. Right?
It's not a battle. It's not a battle, but continue.
Obviously, when the Nets acquired Harden, there were a lot of questions. How's this going to work, et cetera. I think he was the one who showed a great, great willingness to change his game, especially those first couple months on the team where he was more than willing to be a facilitator. He was not looking to score 38 a night, James Harden. I mean, he obviously has that capability. He was obviously taking advantage of mismatches, et cetera. But he was really willing to be the point guard of this team and get other guys going, get the other stars going, et cetera. So I think there was obviously a lot of criticism of the way he left Houston, but he showed when he got to Brooklyn that he was willing to sacrifice for the greater good.
Yes, and just him and KD being on the same team at this point in their careers is just like unfair stuff. It just is. In the playoffs, like this, if they're both healthy, just like shut it down. It's all over. Okay, so we did this. We survived. Can I give you my honorable mentions here? Because I don't, again, I don't want everyone to come after us with pitchforks.
All right, let me hear some of your honorable mentions.
Okay, so I did have, like I said, I did have Trae Young and Clint Capella slash John Collins as one honorable mention. Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns. I'm expecting a leap from Anthony Edwards this year, and Karl Anthony Towns is a perennial All-Star, so shout out to him. DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine. I mean, that's just
honorable mentions. These are mentions. This is you just naming some guys.
Okay. What about Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum? Did you think about having them on your list?
I did think about that one a little bit, but I'm just cool on the Blazers these days. And I think Dame is great, and I love CJ. I love watching him play, but they just hit a wall for me. So.
So
I like them more than DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine.
Okay.
And Anthony Edwards and Karl Towns.
Okay, so we have to now mention Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons.
Listen.
Now we did not talk about them in this entire episode.
Honestly, I was gonna put them on my list, but I was worried you would think I was trolling. When I was when I was looking up, I was just, this didn't really determine any of my list, but I was just curious in like some two-man lineup stats. Do you know what the Sixers net rating was in Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons two-man lineups?
It was probably like a million.
I think it was like 15.4 or something like that. It was in the 15s. Yeah. I mean,
very good. Very good.
Listen, they had lineups with them that worked before. I still think that 2018 team was probably the best version of the Sixers. And were a JJ Redick.
Wait. Can I stop you right there?
No.
How did those
were a JJ Redick missed three away, I think, from eventually pushing
it was Marco Bellinelli. I was at a wedding watching it on my phone in the bathroom. I'll never forget that game. It was glorious. It was against the Celtics for the record. They lost. Jason Tatum forever. Continue.
In that game five in Boston, Redick misses a left wing three late in the fourth quarter, and I think if he makes that, I think that series might happen differently if Kawhi doesn't hit one of the luckiest shots in history. They might have won the finals in 2019. So I'm not, the reason I want to see Simmons and Embiid split more than anything is I just want to see what those guys can do on their own team, particularly Embiid, because I love watching post players. But they honestly were very close to making my list, not as a troll. Like, they're still really good. They still win a lot of games together. And clearly there's ways to make it successful when Simmons is actually trying to play offense.
Right. I mean, you know, I think Joel Embiid is, when he's committed to doing so, one of the five best players in the league. Has the talent to be the best player in the world. Absolutely. Finished second in MVP.
I almost had them higher than Tatum and Brown on my list.
It would be just sacrilegious. But, like, for me, it's kind of like, I think that these two are, regardless of the lineup data, I think that it's obvious when you watch basketball in
it's
the playoffs when it matters for
fit.
These two, that they're not compatible. So why would I say that they're one of the best duos? It just doesn't really work for me. So
I mean, you had Luka and
shout out to them.
Luka and Kristaps on there, but so
they are compatible. Okay, so the other real quick, the last honorable mention I had, Jokic and Michael Porter Jr. And it's what it is. Michael Porter Jr. could make a leap here.
Are you sure you didn't mean Jokic and Campazzo? While we're talking about Jokic and MPJ real quick, I just want to say if you watch the Nuggets, you'll notice that at least once every game, and maybe once every quarter, you could argue, Jokic gives Michael Porter Jr. a look like, what were you thinking? Like, my dad used to look at me when I was a little kid and I would like spill soda and then go hide under my bed. Like, just a look of pure disdain, like shock and disdain at what they've just done. MPJ gets at least one of those a night from Jokic.
He gets a look. He gets a Jamal Murray foot stomp.
Yeah.
He gets
a Jokic shrug, thrown up in the arms.
Michael Malone throwing his head in his hands, wanting to just find a new profession. He gets all of it, but he's very talented, so had to shut him out.
He's like the good-looking guy on Love Island that just keeps getting opportunities because, you know, he might not be making good chat, but he's so fit.
Are you done?
I am. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I'm in Florida at my parents' house, and there are not a lot of options for entertainment right now. So you can't go outside.
No,
it's too
good.
Humid. I'm pretty sure in South Florida you could just hold like a ribeye up in the air, and the humidity will sous vide it to like a perfect medium rare. That's how wet and sticky it is outside.
We're going to let you go try that right now because our episode just ended. Rohan, this was really fun. Thank you so much to our listeners. Thank you, everyone, for sending in all your emails. Keep them coming. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Rohan, any parting thoughts for our wonderful listeners here, the Open Floor Globe?
Just continue. Shout out to the Open Floor Globe. I'm really excited for this mega mailbag episode. So I hope those emails keep coming in. Thank you just to anyone who's at, like, we get people like reaching out. Leaving nice messages about the pod. I just want to thank the Open Floor Globe again for welcoming me with open arms. And, you know, I just also want to make it clear that Mike and I are friends. We do respect each other, even though things get contentious on this podcast.
I cannot confirm or deny what Rohan just said. Rohan, actually, can you, I'm just thinking of it now, can you give the people your Instagram handle? Because sometimes all the wonderful listeners will DM me and give me questions that way. So maybe we're opening up another avenue to our listenership.
I didn't know I was going to be giving out personal information on this pod.
Sorry. You gotta.
It's at Lil Rosie Vert with some periods in between the Lil Rosie and the Rosie Vert. So, you know,
I just wanted to get you to say that out loud.
Listen, I'm keeping it low key on the gram for a reason. Okay.
Well, on that note, thank you so much once again to all of our listeners. Everybody, please stay safe and continue to enjoy the NBA offseason.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy and Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details. How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.